Yeah, this is a huge honor for me. I'm really excited to be able to take this on. And yes, it is a super huge mouthful. So the acronym, or I guess the way that people say it is they'll call it ICAT, which me coming from ASA, half the time I say ICAST just because that's just right. Anyway, we're getting there.
Welcome to the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast, inspiring real women with a passion for fishing in the outdoors to go get their adventure on. Now, here's your host, Master Captain Angie Scott.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Woman Angler and Adventurer Podcast. This week, I have another guest on with me from the American Sport Fishing Association. We have Martha Gaez, who is the Southeast Fisheries Policy Director. So we'll talk a little bit about that and then also some newer, more recent news about another role that she'll be playing or is playing now. So Martha, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Angie. I'm so glad to join you. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm excited just first of all to just kind of introduce yourself to our audience, talk a little bit about your background and kind of how you got into this.
Yeah, sure. So I, as you mentioned, work for American Sport Fishing Association. I've been the Southeast Policy Director for, I guess, a little bit more than 2 years. Before that, well, let me back up. We'll go way back. So I'm originally from Maryland. Okay. Grew up pretty close to the Chesapeake. My dad was a, and still is a fishing fool, fishing all the time. He did some charter fishing as well, both offshore out of Ocean City and then also in Southern Maryland as well.
Nice.
And so I guess some of that stuck. Went to school, not really thinking that I would end up working in fishing, but here I am. I went to graduate school studied marine biology. And then as I was wrapping up that was at Florida Institute of Technology in Melbourne. As I was wrapping up, you know, I was trying to think about, you know, what's next. And, you know, you get to the point when you're a master's student, so it's like, okay, do I go on and do a PhD, continue the science thing, or go in another direction? And I really wanted to go in another direction and do more, I guess, applied skills. Mm-hmm. And so I found an opportunity working for the Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission, which is the state agency in Florida that manages fish and wildlife. And I was there. I took a position as their regional biologist for marine fisheries in South Florida. So worked out of their West Palm office for a little while and then ended up moving to Tallahassee and taking on eventually leading marine fisheries issues that had some sort of federal component. So there are a lot of fisheries in Florida that occur both in state waters, which is out to 3 miles on the Atlantic, 9 miles on the Gulf, that also extend into federal waters. And so there's a lot of work that happens between state and federal governments and stakeholders on how to manage those fisheries. And so that's what I did. And I did that. I was there for 13 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Cool. And then had the opportunity to make the move over to ASA, and it's never looked back. It's been a great ride.
Very cool. So yeah, when you were with the FWC, you know, that 13 years is a long time. I'm sure you saw a lot of issues over that time. What were kind of maybe one or two of the biggest issues that you were facing in that role?
Yeah. The biggest one, or ones, because it's really a suite of issues, were around red snapper, I would say. So I sat on what's called the Gulf of Mexico Fishery Management Council for FWC. And during my time on the council, we got to a point where the federal seasons for red snapper were getting shorter and shorter. This is on the recreational side. And I think we were down to like 3 days at one point. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, the council and the states and NOAA Fisheries were able to negotiate a way out of that. And what that looks like now is each of the five Gulf states were delegated basically the authority to set seasons for red snapper in their state water, or excuse me, off of their state. So in state waters and federal waters off their state, the council and NOAA essentially issue them a quota and they, you know, manage around that.
Gotcha.
That was a big deal. It's a pretty unique case. We don't have that in any other fisheries in Florida, none other in the Gulf of Mexico and none of the, in the Atlantic. I think there may be sort of a similar agreement with Alaska with some of their fisheries, but it was a pretty big deal. It's been on the management side really successful. This past year in Florida, I think we had like an 80-day season.
Oh, wow.
Compared to if you going back to those 3 days that we were down to in federal waters. So
do you remember what year about that was when it was down to three?
I believe it was 2017, and there were a couple of blow-ups that year. So it ended up not being 3 days, I believe, in that year, but that was the initial, I guess, season announcement. It ended up being changed because of a number of circumstances. Yeah. But yeah, it was it took a while to get there and a lot of negotiating and working with partners, working with the people at Fisher Red Snapper to try to figure out a solution there. Red Snapper is also on the Atlantic side of Florida, and unfortunately, there are similar issues over there, similar but different management challenges that we're still working through. And I'm working on those now from, you know, the recreational fishing industry perspective, working for ASA rather than for the state. So, you know, the basic challenge is the same. You know, it's been a management success story. There are a lot more red snapper on the Atlantic. The fish are nice size. They're very abundant. But the access in terms of being able to harvest red snapper has been, the opportunities have been very limited. Mm-hmm. Just this past year was a 2-day season. So,
oh, wow. Yeah. So yeah, I remember my first experience doing a charter out of Florida. We were vacationing on St. George Island. And mm-hmm. took a captain out, and he was grumbling about the regulations. And it was just kind of funny because we were basically catching nothing but red snapper.
Yes, that's exactly it. Yes, it is like, that's why it's so frustrating to people. Yeah. It's because, you just catch red snapper after red snapper, and it's like, what? You can't keep this. Nope. What's the deal? So, yeah. Very familiar with that problem. So,
mm-hmm. Well, cool. So, I guess FWC is basically headquartered in Tallahassee. Is that correct?
Yeah, they are. But, you know, they have a presence statewide. It's a pretty unique agency as far as the state fish and wildlife agencies go. You know, Florida's a big state. You know, fishing and wildlife is a big deal in this state. Mm-hmm. And so they have really a one of a kind research arm, the Fish and Wildlife Research Institute, that's, I think, unparalleled compared to other state agencies. They're also, of course, working on the management. They've got, I think, the largest fish and wildlife enforcement agency. I think it's in the world.
Wow.
And so it was a pretty cool place to work. I learned so much while I was there and had, I think, experiences working there that I would have nowhere else. So
awesome.
Very grateful for that.
Yeah, so then you transitioned over to ASA. So talk a little bit about what it's like working with the Southeast as the Southeast Fisheries Policy Director. So what, when you say Southeast, what area? I mean, I kind of have a general idea, but what are you basically focused on?
Yeah, so, you know, big picture, and really from like Carolinas around over to Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, we are interested in clean waters, abundant fisheries, and access to both, you know, for recreational fishing. And so that's a fairly broad charge. My day-to-day work, of course, I'm focused on fisheries management issues. So, you know, working with state agencies, the federal council still, highly migratory species within NOAA fisheries, you know, those traditional fisheries management entities. But also, you know, if you think about it, you know, the clean waters part of that a lot of times is not handled through, you know, fish and wildlife agencies. So it's also engaging with other state and federal agencies that have a hand in that. So like in Florida, that may be the Florida Department of Environmental Protection, maybe water management districts, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Sometimes it's local governments, legislatures. So there's lots to do.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But it's cool because, you know, having come from FWC where I was focused strictly on the fisheries management part of it, you know, in this position, it is an opportunity to kind of like take a step back and look bigger picture. And, you know, one thing that I can do in this position that maybe I couldn't at FWC just because of the scope of my work is, you know, try to bring together, you know, both public and private partners potentially in, you know, advancing some of the things that we're interested in. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So when you talk about clean waters, so I've been fortunate enough to spend a little bit more time down in Florida the past couple years. And I don't know if you know Captain Debbie Hansen. I've had her on the podcast a few times. She's in Estero and is a guide. And so as a guide, you know, she's very concerned and connected and when it comes to issues about conservation and clean water and whatnot. And I think she went to a program or something at one of the colleges, and they were talking about the issue of clean water. And one of the things she mentioned was, and something I hadn't really thought about, but all the new development that's happening in Florida and all these, you know, companies that are developers that are coming in and building condos and things like that. And then they're bringing in these non-native landscape plants and things like that, that require, because they're not native, a lot of chemicals to like keep them healthy. And then that's really starting to make a big impact on the water. And it's, you know, something I hadn't really thought of. It's like, if they were just using native Florida vegetation for their landscaping, it possibly wouldn't, you know, have such a big impact. I don't know if that's anything that you've looked at in your role or have come across.
Like you're saying, there's a lot of things that you maybe wouldn't necessarily think about that impact water quality. And so like when we've gone and worked with the legislature, like here in Florida, you know, we've advocated for, you know, some of the things that you wouldn't directly connect to fishing necessarily, but like, you know, things like septic to sewer conversions and that kind of stuff that down the line ultimately does affect, you know, our water quality. So, you know, yeah, all those things matter. And yeah, like it is interesting, you know, some of those like small scale decisions, how they can have a big impact, you know, once you add them all up. So
sure. Yeah. And it's a lot of different things all, you know, working together, in sometimes a negative way, but, hopefully, people like you and others that are working together to help solve these issues, we'll start making a positive impact. So it's awesome.
Want to learn about fishing, hunting, and outdoor gear from fellow experienced outdoor women, as well as get inspired to try something new in the outdoors? Then subscribe to Adventurous, the only women's hunting and fishing magazine. Adventurous is a high-quality print magazine that receives rave reviews, and it also makes a great gift for other outdoor women and youth. Subscribe at Adventurous Magazine and use code WOMANANGLER for 15% off.
So before we wrap up, I want to talk about this new exciting announcement that you were designated by the U.S. Department of State to represent on the International Commission for the Conservation of Atlantic Tunas. That's a bit of a mouthful, but you can abbreviate that, ICCAT. So not just tunas, but also any tuna-like species. So tell us about that.
Yeah, this is a huge honor for me. I'm really excited to be able to take this on. And yes, it is a super huge mouthful. So the acronym, or I guess the way that people say it, is they'll call it ICAT, which me coming from ASA, half the time I say ICAST just because that's just right. Anyway, we're getting there. So what ICAT is it is essentially an international body that, like you mentioned, they are interested in science and management recommendations for Atlantic tunas and other species like swordfish, billfish. There's some shark species in there and a couple other species as well. I guess the easiest way to describe it is it's kind of like United Nations for Atlantic, you know, these like migratory species, tuna species. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's 52 what they call contracting parties that are involved in ICAT. There's a couple of other cooperating parties as well. And, you know, they basically figure out, they're monitoring these fisheries, they're conducting stock assessments through ICAT, and then also making management recommendations for all of the different parties to follow. And so, you know, that could be things like quotas for different nations, you know, so that certainly has a direct impact on ultimately what the regulations are here in the U.S. Because they say they're recommendations if they're coming out of ICAT, but really, you know, if you're countries that are involved in ICAT, they have the obligation to go along with basically what comes out of that body. Mm-hmm. So my role in all this, I will be one of three commissioners. The lead commissioner works for the federal government. And then there's a recreational and a commercial commissioner. And so I'm the recreational one. And my role is to represent basically recreational interests as part of the U.S. delegation as we figure out, you know, as the United States, what we want to do at ICAT. So it's a super cool opportunity. I'm really, really excited. I guess the announcement came out about a month ago now, and I've already had lots of really interesting and exciting conversations with people that are involved with these fisheries in one way or another. And so it's such an honor to be able to pull all that together and be able to represent our industry. So,
yeah. In the announcement, it mentioned, and people might not realize that it says the recreational fishing for these species contributes an estimated $510 million to the United States economy and supports around 4,500 jobs. And that was a report that was out in 2020. So pretty significant industry. You know, somebody who's not in that industry, but of course I've watched the show Wicked Tuna quite a bit on National Geographic. So that's kind of where my mind goes when I think about that. I've had a couple of the stars from that show on the podcast in the past. But yeah, so pretty big industry. So we want to make sure that we're, you know, keeping it thriving and protecting the fish as well.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Anything upcoming you want to mention before we wrap up? I know we've got ICAST is coming up.
ICAST is coming.
Sooner than, you know, be here before we know it, basically. I need to get my registration in. I'm excited to get back down to Orlando this July. So that'll be
Me too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll meet
ICAST
up there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know. I'm sure we'll see each other at either on the floor or at one of the side events that occurs at ICAST. ICAST is... it's so fun, but it's like also I always go in with a huge list of people that I want to see and talk with. And I usually can, but by the end of the week, I'm usually ready to just lay on the floor.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm
just run myself ragged trying to find everybody and catch up. But it is, it's such a great event. Yeah. So
we'll be doing our Angling Women meetup again. BB Harrison is working on that as we speak.
Excellent.
I think a lot of our sponsors are coming back to support us again. So that's always a fun evening offsite just to kind of network and catch up and all that with the ladies. So,
oh yeah, it'll be on my calendar for sure. Cool. It's been a good event to attend. I guess I've been the last couple of years.
Okay. Very cool.
So, yeah.
And even then we're in a room, but you know, there's 100 ladies in there. So it's a challenge to talk to everybody, but, awesome. Well, we'll look forward to that. I appreciate you coming on the podcast and talking about all these things that you're involved in, and we'll look forward to you know, hopefully some, you know, continued positive changes, and you know, keep everything thriving.
Yeah, thanks, Angie. It's been so great to join you this morning on podcast, and yeah, I look forward to seeing you at ICAST, and I'm sure we'll cross paths other places too. So thank you for having me.